Now I can understand why you were hot, 'cause Bin Laden never did get caught. So you said we had Saddam to blame, tried to tell us it was all the same. But now the years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. And those WMD you promised on TV, hey, admit it, you figured it wrong. So I'm taking my country back.
Greetings, this is podcast number 13 of Blast the Right. I'm Jack Clark from TheRationalRadical.com, www.TheRationalRadical.com. Today we have two pretty serious and tense segments. We'll start with GOP Electronic Voting Fraud 101. Next, we'll discuss how right-wingers maim and kill pregnant African women. Let's get right into the first segment. We're now about 2 weeks away from an off-year election, and this brings to mind the major unanswered and unsolved mystery, problem, dilemma, crisis from the 2004 election. That is the damn electronic voting machine issue. If you'll recall, the exit polls showed Kerry winning the popular vote by a 3% margin, but then the actual vote count showed a Bush victory by 2.5%. Such a 5.5-point discrepancy from 3% one direction to 2.5% in the other direction is impossible. Why? Let's get the answer from Dick Morris. Yes, Dick Morris, the Republican and sometimes, at least with Clinton, Democratic political campaign strategist, guru, and pollster extraordinaire. Morris wrote, "Exit polls are almost never wrong. They eliminate the two major potential fallacies in survey research by correctly separating actual voters from those who pretend they will cast ballots but never do, and by substituting actual observation for guesswork in judging the relative turnout of different parts of the state. So reliable are the surveys that actually tap voters as they leave the polling places that they are used as guides to the relative honesty of elections in third world countries." End of quote. They had an election recently in the Ukraine where the exit polls showed the opposition party winning, but then the actual vote that the government announced showed the government candidate winning. There was literally a revolution in the streets, and the government was forced to back down and hold another election, which the opposition then actually was given credit for winning by the government. Getting back to the U.S. 2004 presidential elections, Morris correctly writes, quote, "This was no mere mistake. Exit polls cannot be as wrong across the board as they were on election night. I suspect foul play." End of quote. I'll mention a little bit later what Morris's theory of foul play was. It's a little bit loopy. Let's get into our theory of foul play. Did you know that most of the electronic voting machines in the United States are sold by three companies? And two of them, at least, have strong GOP ties? The third company is said by many commentators to also have strong GOP ties. It seems to me that its ties are more criminal or to the Carlyle Group, which is heavily Republican but has some Democrats in it, so we'll stick with the two companies that clearly have strong GOP ties. What are those? Well, let's see. The three companies are Diebold, or is it pronounced Diebold? I don't know. I'll call it Diebold. Diebold, Sequoia, and Election Systems and Software. Sequoia is the one I'm not sure of. What about Diebold? Wally O'Dell, Diebold's CEO, was a Bush-Cheney pioneer promising to raise at least $100,000 for Bush's re-election campaign. In fact, he pledged to deliver Ohio's electoral votes to Bush in 2004. What he wrote in a fundraising letter was that he was, quote, "committed to helping Ohio deliver its electoral votes to the president next year," close quote. Republicans would probably interpret that to mean, well, he was going to raise money and, you know, above board things like that. Well, perhaps some other things were involved besides just raising money. Since 1998, Diebold has donated $240,000 to political campaigns. All of it has gone to GOP candidates or the party. Now about the other company, ES&S, Election Systems and Software, that was originally funded by the Amundsen family. They're connected to the Christian Reconstructionist movement that openly advocates a Christian theocratic takeover of American democracy. And ES&S is a company that present-day Republican Senator Chuck Hagel ran and himself invested in. And that leads us into the next area, which is, if we're going to posit that the GOP used electronic voting machine fraud to steal the 2004 election, is there any evidence of that? Any past practices that would indicate that the GOP does such things? Yes, there is such evidence, strong evidence. I'll give you evidence that in at least two states, Nebraska and Georgia, the GOP practiced on a state level in 1996 and 2002, what they would later accomplish on a national level in 2004. The 1996 episode involves Chuck Hagel. Hagel ran ES&S and was invested in ES&S. ES&S sold the state of Nebraska the electronic voting machines that Nebraska used to count something like 80 or 85% of the votes in Hagel's 1996 election race. Yes, Hagel leaves the company and runs for the Senate from Nebraska. And lo and behold, he becomes the first elected Republican senator from Nebraska in 24 years. One Nebraska newspaper called it a, quote, stunning upset, close quote. The Washington Post said that his Senate victory was, quote, the major Republican upset in the November election. That would have been November of 1996. Bev Harris of the Black Box Voting website said that Hagel won many largely African-American communities that had never before voted Republican. And all this occurs on machines that Hagel's own company sold to Nebraska with software to count the votes that's kept secret as a trade secret. Want another example where electronic voting machines produce a pro-Republican result that no one expected at all? Let's go to 2002 Georgia. Max Cleland was the incumbent Democratic senator, a veteran who had lost three limbs in Vietnam. A few days before the election, USA Today reported that an Atlanta Journal-Constitution poll showed Cleland with a 49-44% lead over the challenger Republican Representative Saxby Chambliss. Then right after the election, Cox News Service reported, quote, pollsters may have goofed, close quote, because Saxby Chambliss defeated Cleland by a margin of 53-46%. A political news service called The Hotline said that no polls before the election had shown Chambliss ahead. Now, what does this have to do with the electronic vote fraud theory? Well, what it has to do with it is this. All the votes in Georgia were counted on Diebold machines. Yes, Diebold machines. So there you have it. A second example where a race which was supposed to go Democratic, according to all the polls, all of a sudden flips on Election Day and goes the exact opposite way by a not inconsiderable margin. And in both instances, most or all the votes are counted by electronic voting machines manufactured and computer programmed with secret software that none of us can see by Republican-connected companies. Coincidence? I don't think so. Can anyone give me an example where Republican manufactured and secretly programmed voting machines ever gave an election to a Democrat that wasn't supposed to win? I don't think you can find me one. So to my way of thinking, you have practice in 96 in Nebraska, you have practice in 2002 in Georgia, and then in 2004, it's the whole enchilada. The entire national election is flipped by these damn electronic voting machines. The discrepancy between the exit polls and the actual voting results are the evidence for the 2004 presidential election being flipped by these voting machines. Before we go any further, I just want to mention that electronic voting fraud is not the only way I believe the Republican Party committed election fraud in the 2004 election. It's just the one that we're discussing today. Also, I'm well aware of Democratic election fraud in the past. For example, in the 1960 presidential election, Mayor Richard Daley in Chicago stole the election for John F. Kennedy, according to many accounts. Just because the Democrats did it in the past is certainly no reason to let the Republicans get away with it now. I read earlier something Dick Morris said, which basically vouched for the fact that exit polls cannot be wrong, but he doesn't come to the conclusion that the actual vote total was fraudulent. No, he says the exit polls were fixed by the Democrats. I've seen no evidence of that. Other theories have been proffered that they oversampled women who were more heavily Democratic earlier in the day in the exit polling. Another theory is that Kerry voters were more likely to respond to an exit poller. None of those really wash with me. When you have the evidence of Hagel in Nebraska, Cleland in Georgia, both with the voting machines, both with voting machines controlled by Republicans, and then you have this 2004 result, something stinks to high heaven. One final piece to indicate that it does indeed stink to high heaven. Congressman Rush Holt introduced a bill, H.R. 550, that would require electronic voting machines to produce a voter-verified paper audit trail so that the voter can confirm that their vote has been properly cast and that, if necessary, there would be a paper trail to recount the vote. Because with these electronic voting machines, there's nothing to recount. The Republicans are apparently fighting tooth and nail to prevent that bill from being seriously considered by Congress. Representative Robert Ney of Ohio, yes, Ken Blackwell, 2004 election fraud, Ohio, has refused to even hold hearings on Holt's bill. Why would the Republicans be so against a bill requiring a paper trail if they had nothing to hide? And just so you know, having a paper trail may not be good enough. The reason is, many states pass laws that say, unless the vote margin is less than X percent, no audit or recount can be possible. Well, all that means is that those who control the voting machines will make sure that the margin is greater than X percent, so you can't recount or check the paper trail, even if there is one. There has to be a requirement for mandatory random audits to check the integrity of the vote, regardless of the vote margin. Radio host Tom Hartman really hits the nail on the head when he says, why are private corporations involved at all in counting the vote? If there was ever a government function that should be performed only by the government, it's counting our votes. Consider this. What if the shoe were on the other foot? What if Michael Moore, Barbara Streisand, George Soros, and Jesse Jackson were the owners of the companies that produced the electronic voting machines and software for the election? You don't think the right wing would be raising bloody murder about how could there possibly have been a fair election with such a partisan group being, you know, the ones who made the machines and software? And what if, in addition, the software had never been properly vetted? And what if the election results didn't match the exit polls? And what if all the electronic errors seem to go in favor of Kerry. You don't think the entire Republican establishment would have been demanding a congressional investigation and postponement of any inauguration until the truth about Democratic fraud was discovered? Of course that's what would have happened. But unfortunately, the shoe wasn't on the other foot. The shoe was on the Democratic foot, and the spineless, wimpy Democrats copped out and barely raised a whimper about this, at least the mainstream organizational Democrats. If you ever bring up this issue to a right-winger, you're going to invariably get one or all of these responses.
No, get over it. Tinfoil hat conspiracy. You're a sore loser.
You know what? I would just say, why don't you raise your discourse above the playground level? What's coming out of your mouth is childish pablum. Those who are defrauded have the right to seek redress. How much more so is this the case when it's an entire nation and when the fraud involves the theft of democracy? Okay, in our next segment, let's leave the cyber world of voting fraud technicalities and go to the real-life world of flesh-and-blood humans. In other words, from the world of how the right wing takes power to what they do with the power when they have it, the results of that power. We'll now talk about some of the bitter fruit of the right-wing killing machine. New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof visited a maternity hospital in Niger. The title of his column is, "Mr. Bush, This is Pro-Life?" I'm going to read some excerpts from the column, reordered a bit. It's a little bit graphic and probably a whole lot upsetting, but we really do need to see what's being done in our name. Nicholas Kristof writes, "A 37-year-old woman was lying on a stretcher, groaning from labor pains and racked by convulsions. She was losing her eyesight and seemed about to slip into a coma from eclampsia, a complication of pregnancy that kills 50,000 women a year in the developing world. In this case, the woman, a mother of six named Ramatou Issoufou, was lucky. This maternity hospital had been equipped by the UN Population Fund. The Population Fund promotes modern contraception, which is practiced by only 4% of women in Niger, and safe childbirth. Nurses wheeled her into the operating theater, scrubbed her belly, and administered a spinal anesthetic. Then Dr. Kayode cut open her abdomen and reached inside to pull out a healthy 6-pound, 6-ounce boy. After removing the placenta, Dr. Kayode stitched up Mrs. Issoufou. Her convulsions passed, and it was clear that she and the baby would survive. For all the criticism heaped on the UN, these were two more lives saved by the UN Population Fund. No thanks to the Bush administration. Mr. Bush and other conservatives have blocked funds for the UN Population Fund because they're concerned about its involvement in China. They're right to be appalled by forced sterilizations and abortions in China. But they're wrong to blame the Population Fund, which has been pushing China to ease the coercion. And in any case, the solution isn't to let African women die." End of excerpt. Kristof also makes clear that deaths are not the only result of right-wing policy. Continuing with his column, "Even when they don't die, mothers often suffer horrific childbirth injuries. In the town of Gouray, a 20-year-old woman named Fatih Ali was lying listlessly on a cot, leaking urine. After she was in labor for 3 days, her mother and her aunt had put her on a camel and led her 40 miles across the desert to a clinic. But midway in the journey, the baby was stillborn, and she suffered a fistula, an internal injury that leaves her incontinent. End of excerpt. So we have death, and we have horrific injuries, which are nothing less than the maiming of these women. Continuing with Christoph's column, village women are the least powerful people on earth. That's why more than 500,000 women die every year worldwide in pregnancy, and why we in the West should focus more aid on preventing such deaths in poor countries. Pregnant women die constantly here because they can't afford treatment costing just a few dollars. A few days earlier, a pregnant woman had arrived with a dangerously high blood pressure of 250 over 130. It was her 12th pregnancy. Dr. Coyote prescribed a medicine called clonidine for the hypertension, but she did not have the $13 to buy it, nor could she afford $42 for a cesarean that she needed. During childbirth right here in this hospital, she hemorrhaged and bled to death. Somewhere in the world, a pregnant woman dies like that about once a minute, often leaving a handful of orphans behind. End of excerpt. Christoph often writes these enormously powerful columns. He opens our eyes to corners of the world that most of us would never get to see. My only problem is how he often ends these columns. Here's how he ended this one. Quote, "Call me naive, but I think that if Mr. Bush came here and saw women dying as a consequence of his confused policy, he would relent. This can't be what he wants, or what America stands for." End quote. To me, this is mewling, whimpering, whining to George Bush, sort of implying that, oh, George just doesn't know what's being done under his administration. If only he knew, he wouldn't want these poor people to die. Well, I would just respectfully ask, how many of these columns does Nicholas Christoph have to write over how many years for him to realize the truth? Bush and the right-wingers don't care about these pregnant African women. Bush and the right-wingers don't care about any poor people, not at home, let alone abroad. My own theory is, as I stated in podcast number 2, comparing right-wingers to serial killers, that Bush and right-wingers in general have a pathological level of lack of empathy for others. Like serial killers, they just cannot feel any empathy for the suffering of others. It doesn't mean anything to them. That's why Bush and the others can so easily, so coldly, so clinically, cut programs, cut funding that saves the lives and health of other human beings. Bush and the others just don't care. Nicholas Christoph will be writing columns like this from now until doomsday, unless we get Bush and any other right-winger that may come along after him out of office and replace them with real human beings who understand what life is all about. We do have a moral responsibility to our fellow human beings, and effectively and immediately carrying out that responsibility must be a prime goal of government. If right-wingers don't want the government itself to undertake that function, well then, they need to come up with some alternative solution to achieve those goals. And until they do so, until they come up with such an alternative solution, then they need to get on board and support the government doing it. That will about wrap it up for today. I know I said last week I was going to read some listener email today. I didn't get to it. Hopefully next week. If you found this podcast worthwhile, you might want to check out my entire website, www.therationalradical.com. Also, I urge you to turn your friends onto this podcast, and if they don't know what podcasting is, explain that all to them as well. They'll thank you for it. The music that I opened the podcast with, and that I'll play about 60 seconds of as we close, is called Taking My Country Back by Honky Tonkers for Truth out of Nashville. Please send your comments, positive or negative, I want to hear from everybody, send them to rational@adelphia.net. So, until next time, I'll sign off and say I love you all, including all you right-wing pieces of crap.
Now you don't know my name, but you know who I am. I'm your everyday work hard, play hard, raise kids and pray hard, common man. And Lord knows I love this land. Treating